Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. As always, I am your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. Now, we got a good amount to discuss today, but first, we got to finish up free agency. And even though free agency just opened up a little over probably a week, 2 weeks ago, we're still seeing a little bit of fallout from some moves. So we're going to recap the rest of the moves we haven't discussed about. First, let's talk about the Dallas Mavericks, who made some interesting changes to their roster. Maybe on the smaller level, but I think ones that we have to keep an eye on, of course. And the first, we have to talk about Klay Thompson being signed and traded to the Mavs. And a pretty, non-insignificant investment here at 3 years for $50 million total. With that, I'm sure the Mavs kind of guaranteed him a bit of a role. He seemed a little bristly with how the Warriors treated the negotiations with him, and he seemed like he kind of wanted out and wanted to be a place that respected him and wanted to play him minutes. You could argue if he's declined to a point where he shouldn't see those minutes, I probably wouldn't make too much of a counter-argument to that. But the fact remains is that I'm sure there's been some promises there, and I'm expecting him to get a significant role and minutes there. Probably, to that 30 minutes per game mark. That's probably what I'm expecting him to play there in Dallas. And we know what Klay Thompson can give you at this point. A lot of shooting and probably not much else, which is fine. He is still, I think, one of the best shooters in the league. He's a sporadic, inconsistent shooter, can be streaky, and can sometimes shoot his team into games as well as out of games. But at the end of the day, you're getting a player who can provide significant value in threes. Now, is that worth, not getting other stats, him hurting your field goal percentage? That's up to your roster. That's going to be your call. But he should be a cheap enough investment where, if you just want to add a splash of threes and you don't care about the field goal percentage, I'm fine with you going out there, getting Klay Thompson, or just keeping him as he ages out. I think he's going to have a good role. We saw the types of, shots other players were getting, or at least had the chances to get with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving there in town. So if he's just asked to, spot up on the wing and bomb from deep, I think he's going to do that and get you good threes. What was also interesting is the Mavs brought in Quentin Grimes as part of the Tim Hardaway Jr. salary dump. And I think he's been someone that Dynasty managers were kind of hoping got more of a chance 2 seasons ago. And then he basically had a disastrous season last year where everything that could go wrong went wrong. He kind of had his role yanked around with the Knicks and then dealt with some injuries as well. Got traded to the Pistons, couldn't really show what he could do or even have a chance as this knee injury lingered. And so, maybe this is another chance for Quentin Grimes to show what he can do. Kind of as a combo guard, providing some defensive stats, maybe some shooting. Basically, you're 3-and-D profile from a guard. The issue I have with buying into Quentin Grimes right now is that it feels like NBA teams are more out on him than we as Dynasty managers maybe want to be. And I'm not saying we should probably be that heavily invested in the Grimes. His fantasy profile isn't that appealing. Whenever you hear 3-and-D players, that also usually means they're probably not giving you a whole lot for Dynasty and fantasy. But you would hope he could have at least worked his way into a consistent role in minutes 2 seasons ago when his value was at peak. His value is depressed now, but I'm not sure it's depressed enough at a point where we should feel confident buying back into him. I hope he stays healthy. I hope he can show what he can do. I think he could have a role on this team. But how much of a role that is, and then how valuable that is for Dynasty and Fantasy, I'm not really sure on that. Someone I'm keeping a little bit of an eye out for, but I'm not probably expecting some burst back into the greater discussion. The Mavs also went out and signed Najee Marshall at a little cheaper price than Derek Jones Jr. went to the Clippers for, which I think it's interesting. Najee Marshall is, kind of another one of those 3-and-D players, a little bit more size than, Quentin Grimes, for instance, who I thought just really impressed me with his minutes on the Pelicans, a player who I think can tick a lot of boxes. Now, as I just said, 3-and-D players who tick a lot of boxes don't necessarily contribute too much to Dynasty. But if you're talking about in, you know, the 200s range, something like that of rankings, sometimes you are just looking for a depth player that can play. I don't think Najee Marshall has, you know, the highest fantasy upside. I'm not going to, you know, lie to you and say he does. He's a player I've appreciated, though, on the Pelicans, and think he's deserving of a little bit greater of role. I mean, there's no Derrick Jones Jr. there. You got basically PJ Washington as your larger wing, who is good in his role. He should see, I think, the similar role we saw in the playoffs and down the stretch for the Mavericks. But there's room for another wing there. We saw that with Derrick Jones Jr. fulfilling that role. And I think Najee Marshall could do that. I don't think it's going to come at a great, you know, per minute stat upside or anything like that. But someone I think that I'd be okay buying into for a cheap cost if you're just looking for a rotation forward that you're confident can get minutes in. And sometimes that's what you're looking for in depth. If you're in a 30 team and Najee Marshall could be added pretty cheap for maybe, let's just say, a high second round pick, maybe even a late first round pick. I don't know if I'd go that high as a late first, but you know, a prospect that you're not really too enamored by and some second round pick, I think you could get that trade done, and I think you'll appreciate what Najee Marshall can do for your team just in terms of reliability. Again, Najee Marshall is not a high upside fantasy player, but I think you can appreciate some of the smaller things he can bring to your team with some of the threes, a little bit of boards, maybe a little bit of defensive stats here and there. And that does have some marginal value. As I said with PJ Washington earlier, I'm not concerned with these moves for him. I think he's pretty locked into his role. And I think it's just a question if we can see that efficiency come back. It's kind of waned a little bit since his, I would say, his second year mini breakout, where, you know, he shot above 45% from the field. Since then, he's been a little bit worse in that regard. I'd like to see with some greater chemistry with the team, maybe he finds some easier cuts and duck-ins, finds some easier attempts at the rim. And maybe his three-point shooting gets a little better. I mean, we saw him have that hot stretch against the Thunder of the first round. It's one of the rounds of the playoffs where he popped off and everyone was saying, wow, the Mavericks were geniuses for getting PJ Washington. Look at his three-point percentage. And then he kind of tailed off the rest of the playoffs. He's been a streaky, inconsistent three-point shooter. But he should have the opportunities, and I'm wondering if he can see a little bit more from him. Maybe he even taps more into his defensive potential with his length and measurables, and we can see those steals and blocks tick up a little bit. And that could be just, you know, nice little improvements for his Dynasty value. Again, not someone I am probably hard buying in Dynasty, but yeah, I don't mind trading for him, thinking there's maybe a little bit more juice out of him than what we've seen in the past couple seasons. Let's go to the Mavericks. Sorry, not the Mavericks. We just finished discussing the Mavericks. Let's go to the Orlando Magic now, where they made a big splash in signing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And, I mean, his role is going to be the same there. He's going to be the 3-and-D ring, and I think, more importantly, the one that provides spacing for Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. Those are players who kind of have been desperate for some spacing. I mean, the whole Magic team as a whole has just been desperate for any semblance of any shooting and spacing. And KCP, just as he's done in the Nuggets, should provide that for the Magic star players. So maybe Paolo and Franz can see their field goal percentage tick up a little bit. Maybe we see their passing numbers and their assists tick up a little bit as well. I mean, I think Paolo's best skill is his vision at his size and his handles and craft. So with just that little bit extra space in the court, yeah, maybe we see his efficiency tick up a little bit and we see those assist numbers climb into a range where, okay, now it's not just, you know, theoretical, it's actualized passing numbers, which, yeah, that would just be great for his fantasy value and really make assists not just a category he chips in, but one that he's impactful in. And same for Franz. Maybe we see a little bit of that effect as well. And for Caldwell-Pope, I mean, I'm expecting him to see pretty good minutes, probably similar minutes to Denver, and just provide the steady value that we were used to for the past however many seasons it is. Pope is just really a good fit for any team, and I think it's no different on the Orlando Magic here. What I don't like is what it signifies for Jet Howard. You know, Jet Howard was, I mean, I'd say the Magic reached for him last year with the 11th pick. I thought they should have drafted Greedy Dick there. I would have even preferred Jordan Hawkins over Jet Howard. But with that draft capital, I kind of second-guessed myself a little bit and thought, okay, maybe they're saying something. They do need shooting. Maybe they're going to try him out and see how he does. But they pretty much kept him stashed in the G League for the whole season. Even though he showed everything you'd want at the G League level. He was bombing from deep like crazy, hitting a good percentage of them. And I'm kind of surprised it didn't at least give him a chance when some injuries came up. So I understand the Magic bringing in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. But it's harder and harder to see if the Magic are really going to give Jet Howard even a chance. And without minutes, you can't even see if he's producing or if he's going to get a chance there to see any minutes at all. And what really exacerbates that is that the Magic also brought back Gary Harris on a, not a significant contract or anything, but Gary Harris provides some, again, 3-and-D value, a little bit of shooting, and some good defense that fits into the Magic system well. And it's really hard to see if Jet Howard is just going to get a chance there. I think this is someone you may just have to sell at a loss and be okay with that, and hope we find the manager that likes him enough. Honestly, I myself traded Alex Caruso away for Jet Howard, thinking, okay, Caruso may go elsewhere, may not get as many minutes, which may have borne true a little bit with his trade to the Thunder, and I was somewhat anticipating Jet Howard having a role in the Magic this season in which his value would increase. Sadly, that may not be the case, and I may be regretting that trade slightly. And I think managers who are holding on to Jet Howard, you may just have to accept that's going to be the case. I'm okay with you holding on to him a little bit in the season, see how things shake out, just because you may not get any valuable trade offers for him at this point. But he's not someone I'm thinking I have to hold on to waiting for his breakout moment. For Jalen Suggs, KCP shouldn't mean anything at all. It mainly affects the other guards like Jet Howard, like Gary Harris, and like another name we'll get to in a second here. Jalen Suggs is still going to provide his dynamite point of attack defense, his defensive havoc creating ways. And if anything, you can argue having a stout defender like KCP allows Jalen Suggs to do his thing more often. Probably not the case, his steal rate's already pretty high, but he can at least maintain that level. And with the extra spacing, maybe he gets a little bit more chance to develop his lead guard skills a little bit. I spoke a couple months ago how I don't think Jalen Suggs really has that in his bag. He's basically your elite 3-and-D combo guard. But, the addition of KCP could allow that to come through a little bit. I'm not saying it could, but there's a chance. Okay, let's get to another player I just hinted at, an Anthony Black. The Magic brought in, KCP. They also retained Gary Harris, who is probably now the defensive guard in that guard group now. And Black has kind of kept a little bit more on the fringes of their rotation. You got, Jalen Suggs, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Gary Harris. That's kind of probably your three-guard rotation there. And Anthony Black may just be the fill-in option, or just, the 5-10 minutes a night guy option. I thought he flashed some interesting defensive value, but again, like Jet Howard, is Anthony Black going to get his chance in the rotation? I'd like to think he will. I like to think his defensive potential should at least afford him some opportunities. But if the Magic are going to be trying to win, I don't know if that's going to be the case. Anthony Black is, a polarizing prospect due to his offensive foibles, and that was definitely what could have held him back from rotation minutes. But that could just continue being the case, sadly. I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping we can see Anthony Black and see what he can do, but it's a little hard to see where his consistent role is coming on the team. And lastly, Cole Anthony, kind of a bit of a forgotten name and man in the rotation. So now this is the fifth guard we're talking about. Actually, I think this is a six. What, Jalen Suggs, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Gary Harris, Anthony Black. Yeah, Cole Anthony. That's five guards in the rotation here. Now, Cole Anthony does bring that offensive skill set that, the other players, other guards at least on the team don't have. So I probably still expect him to be a spark plug rotation role here. But his salary is a good avenue for the Magic to use in some additional trades or an upgrade. He's more a watchlist player for me than someone I'm heavily targeting, just because I don't know how much his role would increase even on a different team. And any trade rumors that I'm putting out there right now are more speculative on my part. But maybe just someone to keep a little bit of a small watch list eye on. If his minutes start dipping early in the season, I think he's pretty clear trade bait, and you can maybe trade for him at a depressed value. And then when he does get traded and potentially sees a more consistent role off the bench, then he's someone that bumps back up to that value that we've seen. So just keep Cole Anthony in the back of your mind here. That pretty much takes us through recapping individual teams. So now we're just going to go a little scattershot here across the league and discuss the other signings and the other big signings that we haven't previously touched on. The first is going to be Miles Bridges re-signing with the Hornets. And, I mean, I've spoken on him before a little bit. I'm not really a fan of his due to his off-court issues and domestic violence off-court issues. But, I mean, he is going to see minutes. He is going to produce. The Hornets made a pretty decent financial contribution to him, or not contribution, financial investment to him with the contract they just gave out to him. Your mileage may vary on rostering him, but if you do, and if you choose to make that decision, expect some similar production, and with LaMelo Ball hopefully healthy, we could see the efficiency go back up a little bit. I don't think he affects really most of the other players' usage too much. I think there's enough usage for Brandon Miller to see the ball in his hands. Even TJ Anzalone to see just some backup minutes if the Hornets want to play him that early. That's fine too. They can see that. So, we'll see. It may mean Josh Green. You can't see the Josh Green breakout. He was traded there in a different move. Josh Green probably just has a bit of a backup combo guard role. And maybe we see him get a little more usage, get a little bit more time to see what he can do. I'm not really expecting it, but it's there. I was pretty disappointed with his development in Dallas this year for Josh Green, but I think he'll have at least a consistent role. If you were rostering Grant Williams, expecting him to continue to see starter-level minutes, then that should be out the window. Expect Grant Williams just to have a fine bench role, put up some threes, some boards, maybe some other stats here and there, and that's probably it. A little bit of a boring 3-and-D skill set from Grant Williams, and without the minutes, it's hard to see anyone getting too excited about him. Moving on to the Pacers now, who brought back Obi Toppin on a pretty solid contract. 4 years, about $60 million, so $15 million per year roughly, should be a little bit above the MLE. And why that's interesting is, what does that mean for Jairus Walker there? I will say I think Obi Toppin fit in really well with what the Pacers are trying to do. They run an up-tempo system. Toppin is an active cutter, a pretty active shooter. Also doesn't really... Actually, Toppin plays well into their identity of not maybe great defenders with not great mobility there. So, Toppin might be the perfect Pacers player. But, I mean, he had a fine season. Some good threes, a little bit of boards, decent efficiency. Nothing wrong with that from a depth forward option. But on the court, you could say there's a little bit of blockage now for Jairus Walker. So how confident are the Pacers in Walker? Now, it seemed like Walker was being given good run in the G League and Summer League, but more as a wing rather than a forward, which is fine if the three-point shot comes around. It did look pretty good in the G League and has continued here in the early run in Summer League. And it's fully possible that Walker does just slot in as the backup to Aaron Naismith and does see good minutes this year. I'll believe it more when it happens. That's probably the clearest path to minutes for Jairus Walker right now, but I'm just very curious to see how the Pacers work with that rotation and what they do in that regard. I still believe in Jairus Walker as a talent. I really loved him in the draft and loved his fantasy skill set and his translations. But I just would like to see him have at least a consistent role, please. I really want to see what he can do. And I think he'd be really good fit on this Pacers team as well, on the defensive end. And I think he can bring a lot to the offensive end as well, with his connective play. And if that shooting's real, okay. So that being said, Jairus Walker isn't someone that I'm willing to sell low on yet. He's someone I have been trying to acquire in leagues, but managers... and I think rightfully so, are still holding on to him on the hope that he will see run somewhere. Maybe he's a future trade piece to upgrade for the Pacers. Could be the case. But that would just help his dynasty value if he does get moved, because that means another team believes in him a lot. So we'll have to monitor the Jairus Walker situation there. Let's talk about Chris Paul to the Spurs. And really, that should just help all the other Spurs. It's a good one-year landing spot for Chris Paul's value as well. Maybe not in total games value. Like, we could definitely see Chris Paul get rested and, you know, injury managed throughout the year. But I'm sure Chris Paul didn't want to take a backup role. I'm sure he's going to play good minutes. And, yeah, I mean, his scoring has gone down. There's no doubting that. But the assists are still there. He's still the point guard for a reason. So Chris Paul can just give you some sneaky assist value, which I'm a huge fan of in Dynasty Leagues and Deep Dynasty Leagues, where assists can be very hard to come by. I mean, shouldn't be too much to acquire. Can't, you know, unless the manager is really all in and needs Chris Paul's assist, should be an easy guy to trade for. And I think it just helps all the other Spurs. They now have a pretty elite table setter. So, you know, Jeremy Sochan doesn't need to play point. He can play more of that off-ball facilitator role. Obviously, Victor Wembanyama is aided by this. How many times do we see Wembanyama have great post position and the players on the Spurs just somehow missing the big man? I don't know how you can miss Wembanyama on the court, but the Spurs players did multiple times. I am curious what it means for Stephon Castle, though. I mean, I don't think he's going to play the point guard position this year. I don't think he's going to be running the offense too often. Now, he could learn under Chris Paul. Definitely in the cards. But we'll see how much of an effect that has. And I do think those who thought, you know, Stephon Castle landed in the perfect draft spot with the Spurs, I would maybe take a bit of a step back. And definitely, again, if you're ever trusting rookies to have immediate production to your team, that's just never, or not never, it's rarely been the case that rookies are that helpful to your fantasy teams year one. So just hold your horses on that thought. If you thought Castle might, oh, he might actually have a lot more assist, probably won't be the case year one. And I also have no clue what the Spurs starting lineup looks like. You know, especially with the forward spot, we touched on Barnes being traded there on the last pod. But, you know, I probably expect Jeremy Sochan to see the most minutes out of this Harrison Barnes, Keldon Johnson, Jeremy Sochan group. But how many minutes more does he see? Will he approach 30 minutes per game? He probably will, based on how the Spurs have handled rookies. But as I said in the last pod, a little bit of a question of how that forward rotation is going to shake out. And lastly, some two smaller signings that I think I just like, and you could get these players at value. DeLon Wright went to a minimum on the Bucks, and I mean, they just need players that can play a role for them. DeLon Wright has always been that solid backup guard who, when he gets minutes, does pretty well for them in fantasy, and I think on the court as well. Malik Beasley went off to the Pistons. They have a pretty clear hole at guard, and just for someone who can actually defend that point of attack. If DeLon Wright isn't completely cooked and aging out, I think he can give you some good, cheap guard value there. And, I mean, he should be a cheap acquisition cost. So for your win-now teams, be looking at DeLon Wright. And Caleb Martin went to the Sixers. This should ding Oubre a little bit. I think Caleb Martin's probably a little bit of a better defender than Kelly Oubre, although brings a worse offense to the table. But they both probably share that, you know, fourth or fifth slot and rotations and closing lineups, depending on who has a hot hand or what the matchups are. I think it's a good landing spot for Caleb Martin in that regard, but it probably dings Kelly Oubre a little bit. Not enough for a significant difference, but, and both players will be valuable, but there's definitely less upside with both of them now. That pretty much concludes our free agency talk. That pretty much recaps the major signings. There's obviously a lot of smaller names that we didn't touch on that will provide some value here and there, but that was basically three parts of free agency throughout the pods. So now we got to talk about Summer League scouting. And what you should be looking for, and how you should approach it. And this segment is probably going to sound very similar to my March Madness scouting how-tos from a few months ago, because there's a lot of parallels. The first being, a lot of these rookies and prospects that we care about will probably have, you know, roughly a 2 to 4 game sample max. That's not a lot of games. That is not enough time to make any sweeping conclusions about any of these players, any of these prospects. I don't think I can emphasize that enough. This sample in Summer League is not enough to make any sweeping conclusions. These scouting notes from Summer League should be a footnote to the larger body of work we've seen from our players. That larger body of work should be your entree and your main course. I know I'm kind of mixing up metaphors there, but I'm pretty sure I'm getting the point across. These Summer League notes should not overshadow, you know, the 30 games we've seen from these prospects previously. So, should you just not watch any Summer League? No. It's definitely fine to watch. Just keep in mind these caveats and, you know, these notes that I'm telling you right now. And take any performances or statistical notes with a grain of salt. You know, players can go on hot streaks for three games. It's not unheard of. What you have to trust more is basically your, for lack of a better term, eye test and vibes, rather than concrete stats here. Which, I'm not saying stats are bad, they're good. But you have to see how a player is playing, how they're impacting the game, and what they're actually doing on the court. And so what things can we take away from eye test and vibes-based scouting? We want to look for skills that players haven't flashed before. I think a great example of this is Keontae George's passing vision from last year. Rings a bell. Where Keontae George in his freshman year at Baylor was more of kind of this gunner type, didn't really look the pass too often. And he still has some of those tendencies for sure. But in his first few games at Summer League last year, he was showing a lot more vision and just a variety and diet of passes that didn't show up on his game tape at all, which was really interesting because that suddenly made him a much more valuable dynasty prospect if you can actually add assists to your game. Another thing we can look for is second or third year players being given a larger role by the team and then doing well with it. That kind of indicates a belief that the team thinks that that player can maybe step into a role and do other additional things on the court than that they've asked for them from the past. The example of this here would be Desmond Bane. Before his second year, this was actually 2 or 3 seasons ago, I believe it was before his second season, he played in the Utah Summer League Classic, which is not even the main Summer League event. But the Grizzlies were asking him to be the main lead guard initiator, which in his rookie year, he was just mainly playing off ball. And it was interesting because, okay, maybe the Grizzlies are seeing something in him that we haven't seen previously. And Desmond Bane really excelled in that role at Summer League. And again, not saying that should overshadow what we saw at the NBA level from him, but it was intriguing enough that, okay, we have to pay attention to that somewhat and keep it as a footnote in the back of our minds. And actually myself, in a dispersal draft, I drafted Bane, not, you know, I didn't reach for him or anything, but he was on the table and I thought, okay, if what we saw in Summer League is anything real, it provides, you know, this translates at all, he's a much, much more valuable player and has glimpses of upside more than anyone else who's at the table at that draft point. I drafted Bane, and I've been reaping those rewards ever since in that league. Another thing we should be looking for is, are older prospects looking overmatched, or at the very least not showing some dominance and some physical dominance? And so I think two examples we've already seen in this year's Summer League is Terrence Shannon Jr. and Dalton Knecht. And on either end of the spectrum there, Terrence Shannon Jr. in his first game looked dominant. He looked like he was imposing himself physically, looked better athletically, was making his shots too, but I was more impressed with the way he carried himself, and he looked just better than the guys on the court. He did not look like he belonged there, which is what you want to see from an older prospect. Dalton Knecht, on the other hand, I didn't really think he was looking like he was that much better than the guys out there. And I know his shooting stats look fine. and some of his numbers look fine, but I didn't see him getting separation in offense. Didn't see him really using his, you know, physical prowess to get past guys and create separation and get to the rim often. He kind of was getting, you know, he would dribble a little bit, not get past this man, have to pass the ball around. And that just shows that there's probably not that upside juice to him. I mean, that was already my interpretation of it anyways, so I could be anchoring on my scouting notes a bit here with Dalton Connect. But the fact he wasn't doing that is a footnote again to the larger body of work. And I didn't like his defensive tape as well. It just makes me, yes, I am anchoring to my previous thoughts on Dalton Connect here a little bit. But, you know, people who say, oh, he's a three-level scorer, he's going to fit in well at the defensive end, and he can provide some length and really fit into the starting lineup and closing lineup, I'm not seeing that from him. I'm seeing more an off-ball shooter who needs others to create for him and could be a defensive liability as well. That's not a starter at the NBA level. So two examples there of older prospects. And, I mean, there's a reason why my rookie ranks are already released, because Summer League is a footnote to this. Unless something dramatic happens, then my rankings aren't going to really shift any, if at all. I'm not expecting my rookie rankings to really move too much, because, yeah, Summer League is more a footnote. Again, I think it's, you can watch it, get something from it, but don't let it overshadow your larger body of work. That will do it for this episode of the Punt Intended podcast. Now, I just probably, you know, look down on Summer League a little bit here, but I will continue monitoring it and watching the games for any performances that do stand out, or maybe just add some additional footnotes to my scouting notes. I'll be detailing notes on players in our premium Discord, so if you have an NBA Fantasy Pass subscription, then make sure you're in our Discord and seeing those notes that I'm putting out for you. And if you want access to those notes in our premium Discord, hey, sign up for that NBA Fantasy Pass. You'll get that and a lot more good articles throughout the entire offseason. That will include my updated Dynasty rankings, which I am working through. It's a little bit of a slog. There's a little bit of struggle here in Houston without power, but we're working through and doing the best we can. I'm also doing a 2023 rookie rankings review and seeing where some of my hits or misses were, and reviewing that to basically kind of judging myself, seeing where I think I nailed rookies, where I missed, and what I think is maybe a little bit to be determined. So be on the lookout for that as well in the upcoming weeks. Other than that, we'll be on the watch for any standout Summer League performances, and if there's any other free agency moves or trades. See you next time.